The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 576, recorded on June 17th, 2020.
Welcome to the 576th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 409th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah. So last week, I had to post the episode late because TJ was worried about breaking his embargo.
Yeah.
What was it for again? Desperados 3?
Desperados 3.
Yep, and it was released yesterday, and guess what? I got myself a copy, too.
Have you had a chance to play yet?
Yeah, I'm still in the tutorial. He's no longer a kid. He's at the train crash, or the train robbery. So I haven't gotten farther than that. I will say, since we're already doing what you've been playing... Now, I really wanted to talk about Coffee Talk, which is on Game Pass, and it's basically Valhalla, except in Seattle with fantastic creatures, you know, orcs, elves, succubi, vampires. Because for those who don't know, Valhalla, and it's not spelled Valhalla, it's spelled V-A-1-1-H-A-L-L-A, it's a cyberpunk bartending visual novel. In which, you know, you have customers, you mix some drinks, and they, you know, you just listen to the dialogue. So Coffee Talk is the Seattle coffee version of that. And I played the entire thing through for 24 hours, and I cannot recommend it enough. Unlike Valhalla, it's not as pretentious. It is pretentious in a different way, but I mean, there's not so much leet speak, you know, and in-jokes and all that stuff. Coffee Talk just deals with a lot of otherworldly versions of racism and bigotry and father-daughter stuff, and it's really fun to play, and it's fun to mix the drinks as well. So it's a fast game. I haven't tried the endless mode yet, so there's more to it than just the single player mode. I haven't tried the endless mode. I was going to rave about that, but something else just released a demo today, and it just blew my socks off, and that is the demo for Grounded. For those who don't know, Grounded is the survival game in which you play kids who are basically shrunk to the size of ants, and you can play the demo as well. You can play the first 30 minutes of it, and I will say... The game was on my radar before, and now I am absolutely hyped for it. And I played with all the graphics jacked up, and it looks incredible.
That's awesome. Like, it's awesome to see that not only is Obsidian going outside of their comfort zone, but they're doing it well.
Well, that's just it. This is not an Obsidian main game. This is the sort of game that, like, a dozen or less people work off on the side... as their own little project, and the Obsidian, well, this is pretty good. Why don't we work on that? And it also smacks to me of something that happened with Cuphead. The developers of Cuphead showed Microsoft their little game, and Microsoft said, okay, you know what you're going to do? We're going to give you money, and you're going to spend another year and a half on it. And I think that's what Obsidian did here. They saw what this small team was doing and said, we like what you're doing, but guess what? We want you to make this better. And the graphics that they showed in demos cannot compare to what you do when you're actually playing. The lighting effects, the objects, like I went near a baseball, there was a telescope. It might as well have been the Burj Khalifa.
The graphic
ants are adorable.
How's the gameplay?
The gameplay is your basic survival crafting. You know, it's like Subnautica. And, by the way, I can see the first thing that they ask when you first start playing it is it tells you, no, we have an arachnophobia mode. So just in case you get the creepy, if you don't like spiders, you can change. I haven't tried that option. But, yeah, I encountered the spider, and it is like the spider in Limbo. And not that it's, you know, you can't see it. You can see it, and that's the worst part. I tried attacking a ladybug. The ladybug wiped me out in two hits, so you can imagine how a spider is.
Yeah. Like, I remember watching some of the videos, and, like, the creepiest part of the spider is that, like, you can't see it on the edge of the fire, like, where, like, as far as your firelight goes, but you can see its eyes coming towards you. And yeah, so, it's just outright, like, it's so good and creepy the way that they designed it.
And the other thing is this. I have problems with Subnautica, and I have problems with No Man's Sky, because the interfaces and the way you do stuff is just so obtuse. So obtuse. Grounded is less obtuse. I was able to start crafting things right away. Once you press tab, if you have the items, you can craft them. First, you have to take them to your little analyzer thing, and when you do that, you start getting blueprints of what you can do with it. Like, if you get some pebbles, it tells you, well, you can make a spear if you have this and some plant fiber and this, or you can make an axe. And you cannot chop down blades of grass without a pebble axe. Or if you get some plant fiber, you can make some armor. If you get an aphid, you can either make aphid steaks, because you do have to eat, or, you know, you can make them into slippers, that sort of thing. So, when I actually do play this, and it's going to be on Game Pass, so it's, I don't even have to pay for it, but the demo is on Steam, though. If, when I play this, I have a feeling this is going to be the sort of game I don't rush to complete. I think this is a game to be savored. Like a fine wine, you know, just enjoy the world. Don't rush through it. You don't need to rush through it. The demo only has single player, but there is a co-op mode.
That's good. I like games where you can savor, or you're allowed to savor the game and not rush through.
I mean, you do have to eat and drink, but it isn't that hard. And by savor, I don't mean rush, you know, I mean just enjoy the universe, eat, drink, and the one thing I wasn't able to do in the game, because it's only a 30-minute, you can craft your own houses or bases, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, if you like Subnautica but wish you were playing Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, this is the game for you. And, the reason why I said don't rush through it is that, like Subnautica, the game does have a definite ending. Hmm. There are also four distinct players to play as. And you never play as an avatar of yourself. There's just four kids. All of them have their own distinct personalities. Like, I played the athletic one, the athletic boy. Then I played the wimpy boy with glasses. They both, in the beginning, they both have different reactions to their situation. So, but yeah, this looks like a real winner here. And I think Obsidian was right to release a demo, because if you play the demo, you say that, yeah, this is my shit.
That does sound good.
Yeah. Grounded, like, it's probably one of the games that I'm looking forward to playing around with the most this year. Just because of how it's such an odd concept. Like,
if you saw the movie Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, taking that sort of idea and gamifying it into an entire survival game is just, like, I don't know if it's like somebody should have thought of that before this, or if it just came along at the right time, or it's just. But I'm happy it's in Obsidian's hands, because they're doing so good with it.
Here's the other thing. Now remember, the main part of the game is that you're kids. You're not adults, and that's where a lot of it comes from. I mean, you can get killed, right? I mean, you're not immortal, but it also has that kid's eye perspective. So you might as well be kids looking up adults in the game as well, you know. It has that sense of adventure. which I think really adds to it, which I don't think are in games like No Man's Sky and Subnautica to the same degree. When you play it as a kid, it's like, yeah, the game is telling you, let's have some fun. When I first saw it, you know, it was on my radar. You know, it's like, it looks like it could be okay. Now it makes me think, yeah, I definitely want to do this. This is the sort of game I want to stream on a nightly basis to have people watch me play. So what else have I played? Because I know there's other stuff I've played. I already said I tried out Desperados a little bit, too. What else? I know I bought something. Well, you know, before we go on with that, why don't you tell us what you've been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Summer and Mara, and it released pretty recently, I think yesterday or the day before. And it's a game like Zelda Wind Waker meets Stardew Valley, but it has a very story-structured gameplay where you're given quests to do and you accomplish these tasks, and it moves the story forward a little bit at a time. And you get to craft and do stuff, you know, collect materials on your island and build little things, and you unlock them as you go along with the story. But it's, like I said, very story structured, so it doesn't really feel open world, or at least I haven't gotten to that part yet, so maybe I will. But it's a fun, relaxing, cute, chill kind of game. There is definitely an antagonist, which I don't think I've really met. They've only kind of talked about it. Basically, Koa is found abandoned after, I guess, her parents' ship blows up, and this squid lady named Hakua finds her and takes her to her island and raises her to, you know, I guess like 8 years old or something. And it's at that point where she begins to wonder about the outside world, because she's just grown up on this little island and she doesn't know what's going on out there, and she's curious about these pirates that she sees. And there's one point when Hakua takes her to this door and says, "Now, if the pirates should ever show up, just put this little crystal in the wall thing and the door will open up." And it's like, this is the panic room. And she's not really telling her. She leaves her very naive about the outside world. You know, she just kind of plays it off like everything's fine. And there's these pirates out there and she has a nightmare about them. And so it's really interesting to see what happens with the story, because you do have a hunger meter and an energy meter. There's no HP meter, so you don't fight anything, but you still wonder what's going to happen in the story.
Have you been playing Trails in the Sky 3?
I have, yeah.
Okay, how far have you gotten in it?
I'm almost done. I'm almost to the last chapter. There's about 7 chapters, so it takes a little while to get through them all.
Okay. So before we go on to you, TJ, the other game I've been playing is Barn Finders. It's a review copy. It's a bizarre game in which there's a lot of caricatures of white trash. And it's a glorified 3D hidden object game, which you have to go to the barn and you have to find objects to sell at a pawn shop. Very weird, dripping with, I guess in quotation marks, atmosphere. It is deliberately over the top. I mean, it's not quite at Red Dead Rampage yet, but it's close to it. Did you ever play Red Dead Rampage?
I did not.
Okay. Well, you know what you should do for anybody listening to this? Go to YouTube and check out videos of Red Dead Rampage, which was a build engine game. And it had about as much sensitivity as Duke Nukem 3D. So, TJ, what have you been playing?
So, yeah, I'll talk about Desperados, because I have been playing the heck out of it this last week.
Yeah.
Review dropped, I think, on... Thursday last week. But,
Okay, well, the game was released, I believe,
No, you're
Tuesday.
Right. That was, so it would have been the week before that. But, This game is a love letter to anyone who loves Commandos. And This, yes. And I mean that like top to bottom. It is super strategic.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
To give you an idea of how strategic, the game reminds you, you know what, you might want a quick save here.
Oh yeah.
And also, there is an option to have a timer that if like you go 2 minutes without quick saving, the timer will come on screen like saying, you should quick save here.
Mm-hmm. The game is absurdly hard. Like, okay, for example, like there are just so many bad guys strewn across every single level, and alerting even one of them will not only get all the bad guys in the immediate area to come and try to deal with you, but they'll also there's a guardhouse in each area that will send out a wave of more guys to come after you.
Yeah, this is a game in which stealth is really, really important. Because you can, if you right click on a bad guy, it'll show their vision cone. Mm-hmm. But here's the catch: you can only right click on one bad guy at a time.
Right, and like there's things like any sort of obstacle in their way means that you can sort of crouch behind it and avoid them. But and there's a lot of different ways to go about it. Like some characters have like. Like, Kate O'Hare has a perfume bottle that she can throw at enemies and temporarily blind them. Doc McCoy has a medicine bag that he'll throw in front of enemies, and if they're a grunt, they'll walk over and pick it up, and it will poison them for a second. And so you've got, like, ways to manipulate enemies. Cooper has a coin that he can throw, yeah. And if enemies hear it, they'll turn in that direction for a little bit.
Here's the thing, folks. When you start playing the game, you actually play him as a little kid, and he's helping his dad, and his main thing is just to distract people for his dad.
Right.
That coin.
But we can't bear the lead here. One of the biggest ways it's like Commandos is that you don't have, like, unlimited units that you can use. You have up to 5 different characters that are, like, specific in their abilities and specific in their, like... how they can take out enemies, how they can hide enemies, their stealth, all that stuff.
Yeah, and this is the sort of game in which sometimes you want to avoid killing the enemy, not because you're doing a pacifist run, but knocking them out, tying them up, and hiding them in the bushes is a lot safer than actually attacking.
I will say this. I like one of the funnest things I liked about that is that every character has lethal and non-lethal means of taking enemies down. And the non-lethal way usually takes just a little bit longer. So
yeah, I mean, well, let's go back to Cooper. He has a throwing knife, which is obviously, you know, just insta-kill and silent. Or he just bops them on the head and ties them up.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, he can punch them or he can stab
them. That's what
them.
I meant. He bops them with his fist.
Yeah. He can punch them or he can stab them. Also, he can throw that knife and then he has to go collect it.
Yeah.
But that said, stabbing an enemy takes about, like, I think about 2.1 seconds to take them down, and you don't have to tie them up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not going to have to tie them up if you kill them.
punching them takes I think about 3 seconds, and then you have to tie them up afterwards. So it's like, are you gonna go the pacifist route and take a little bit more time and risk getting seen, or are you gonna?
There's less danger of you forgetting that you don't have your knife with you.
Are you gonna do it quick and dirty?
Yeah.
So like it is extremely cool how like they built one of the new features in this game that they haven't done it that they didn't do in Shadow Tactics, and it's new to the Desperado series, is showdown mode.
Yeah.
And what showdown mode is you can freeze time for just a little bit on anything but the hardest difficulty. And then you can input actions for your characters, and you can either carry them out immediately, or you can unfreeze time and wait for the opportune moment to execute them. But basically, it's queuing up all these actions for your character. It is?
Yeah, there's a point where you can coordinate your characters to execute actions at the same time. So, like, if you have 2 guys on either side of a door and you want them to both... take out guards, 2 guards that are there at the same time, you can issue a command either to both of them, and I think it's called like Shadow Act or something, and you freeze it and you give the order, and then you can unfreeze it, and they execute that order at the same time. You know, they'll each, like, attack a separate guard, for example.
Yeah.
And take them out. And I'm sure there's more complicated stuff as the game goes. I only finished, like, the first two scenarios. That game is so much fun. I need to get back to it.
You know, this might whet people's appetite for one of the games that was at PC Gaming Show, which we'll discuss later. But, Desperados 3.
It was very good. Like, if you like Commandos, it's absolutely a must-buy. If you like tactical strategy, it's a really good game, too.
Well, here's the thing. Also, let's not forget, Desperados 3 is also really well-written.
Mm-hmm. And they, like, purposely took a route with it where, like, you don't have to have played the other Desperados games to get in here. Cause, like,
no, I mean, here's the thing. You know, it's like, I never played the other two Desperados games, so but I never felt like I was missing out on anything.
Mm-hmm. It's a prequel. It's about John Cooper starting his gang. So, like, you don't have to, like, worry about missing out from the other two games. You can go in here with basically whether you've played the other two games or not, like, new players can come in and get as much out of it. But, like, old school players, they also won't miss out because it's still a new story. And there are some familiar faces in it from the other games.
Anyways, so this past week, there were two major events. One was the Sony PlayStation 5 press briefing, let's call it. And the other one was PC Gaming Show. And for those who don't know, right now, E3 would be going on. But it's not. So they had their two things. And what's interesting is that the big announcements are being reserved for July from both Sony and Microsoft, which we will discuss later. So let's discuss the PC Gaming Show first. So I actually streamed it on my stream, and I know that Scott watched along halfway through it. So, Scott, right off the bat, because I have the list of all the games that were announced, but it's better to ask you right now, which one did you get the most impression from?
I think I got the most from Aloth, Champions of the Four Kingdoms, and the let's see if I can pronounce it, the one that...
Well, I mean, let's talk about... What was it? The what kingdoms?
Aloth, Champions of the Four Kingdoms.
Which?
That was the one where it's an action RPG, and you are doing, it looks like, one-on-one fights with enemies. I don't know. I think you're one-on-one by yourself. I don't think you have a party. And you're trying to see. Yeah, it's combined with brand new isometric gameplay featuring spectacular moves, challenging fights with various tough enemies. So it's a lot. There's a lot of action, but it's not.
Oh, I see Aloth. Okay.
Yeah, it's not. It's not like Diablo where you have hundreds of enemies coming at you and you're just spamming attacks. This is actual strategy, or at least trying to plan out what you're doing and not just.
Yeah, it's a pretty game.
Yeah. So there's more thought into this, or, you know, supposedly.
Yeah, and by the way, it's being done by Chris Avalon, who has a lot of stuff on his plate these days, because he's also working on Dying Light 2. For those who don't know, Chris Avalon is a writer from Obsidian, and if you ever played a game in which your choices mattered, and they really, really mattered, like Fallout New Vegas, yeah, that's Chris Avalon. That's his deal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this game, TJ?
I saw a glimpse of it, and it looked interesting, but it didn't truly stand out to me among the other things there.
Oh, I know which one that you're probably going to go on the most about. Let's hear it about Evil Genius 2.
Evil Genius 2 was extremely dope, and I'm glad that we finally got to get a new trailer with actual gameplay of it. But I think, man, there were actually like three or four of them that stood out to me the most.
Well, I know one that Scott was excited about, and that's Torchlight 3.
So they had four new classes. I think what they do is they do four different classes each game. That's what they did between the first two games, so they're probably doing that this time, where they have a Dusk Mage, Forged, Realm Master, and Sharpshooter. So it looks like you basically have your magic user, your mechanic, your tank, and then a ranged attacker.
Yeah.
And I think there's base building in this, was there?
Yeah, and it's also out now on Early Access.
Yes. It's a fort building mechanic where you actually like there's apparently just like areas in the world where you can build forts and other players can come across them up to apparently like four. I read 40 in an instance.
Wow.
And basically, character and players can just like customize their fort, deck it out the way they want. Other players can come across it and like utilize it as sort of a base of operations if they want to craft stuff or enchant stuff. And so it's kind of just like a cool way for players to like engage with each other and without engaging with each other.
The unfortunately, it's getting mostly negative reviews on Steam. But here you have to put a little asterisk on that because it's an early access. Because people are complaining there's no single player mode, there's, you know, and all this stuff. But like I said, that's why I don't usually like to play early access.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting and odd that they decided that this could only be multiplayer.
Because there is a single player mode if you read the descriptions on Steam. It's just that the early access, here's my guess is that early access they're basically doing as a beta,
yeah,
for the multiplayer. And I mean, you know, and these people who are giving negative reviews are actually claiming to be Torchlight fans of the first two games. So like I said, you know, if it's an early access, you can wait. You don't have to, you know. And also, you know, I'm pretty sure the devs are reading their complaints and, you know, at some point they're going to say, this is what we're going to be doing. I know that everybody in the YouTube chat for the PC Gaming Show, everybody was waiting for Persona 4 Golden to be announced.
They kicked it off with that, like the second game after Torchlight, didn't they?
Actually, wasn't. It wasn't. They didn't kick it off with it. It was sort of like an hour into the show. And by the way, the show ran long and it was torture. One of the things is that I knew that it was going to be released same day. What I did not expect was that it's on Steam for $20. A game like a remaster like this, you usually expect $30 or $40. You know, I was not expecting $20.
That's for only for Persona 4 Golden?
Yeah. $20. That's it.
Yep. I mean, it's been out for a minute now. Like, it's come across the PSP, PS Vita, and then PS4 and PS.
Yeah, but it wasn't on PC.
And now, it's really cool that a lot of people get to see this for the first time because it is a very long in-depth RPG.
It doesn't have a digital deluxe $25 price, but even so, this is already a game I would expect to be $30 or $40. You know, a remaster, first time on PC. You know, but no, they decided. You know what? We know that a lot of kids are going to want to buy this, and that we want them to buy it. So here it is, $20, $25 if you want to spend a little bit extra. And all the positive reviews on Persona 4 are Persona 5 when?
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. If they're going to release Persona 4, you have to expect they're going to release Persona 5 at some point on PC.
Probably.
So, we were talking about Desperados 3. What did you think of Weird West?
I thought that was that was in my top three of things I saw during the PC Gaming Show. It's interesting to know that Arkane Studios developers are striking out on their own and putting this new interesting thing together.
Well, these guys left them in 2017 in a huff, so.
Yeah.
So while Desperados 3 is Commandos, Weird West is straight up Fallout 1-2.
Yeah, and like there's some interesting aspects to this too. Because they talked about it, they did a little mini interview during the show about it, and I think one of the most interesting aspects that stood out to me is that like each chapter gives you a different protagonist to play with, and if that protagonist like dies or something, then they're permanently dead, and you are you can go back as other protagonists and go find those people and draw them into like a party, but not if they're dead. And, like, so that tells me there's a lot of ambition here to like go off on a very, 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 very branching path, depending on who lives and who dies and who joins you and who doesn't. I don't know how well that'll work because folks have tried, but it will be very interesting to see how well this whole thing adapts as you make choices through the game.
So, Scott, this is an isometric RPG in the mold of Fallout 1 or 2. You must be interested.
Yes. Certainly. You talking about Eloth or a different game now?
Weird West.
Oh, Weird West. Yeah. Okay. I think
that's the Fallout Western game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that'll be fun. Certainly. Like, I guess it'll remind me a little bit of Wasteland, because everything felt so just kind of Western like that, but apocalyptic Western. This one's just a Western style game with isometrics. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I really do like the occult vibe that they've set up for it so far. It was a really atmospheric trailer. And also, I just like the idea of werewolves and cowboys. But yeah, I think my all-time favorite of the entire lineup was probably Fae Tactics.
Okay.
Oh.
So this is like
about it before. This is basically Final Fantasy Tactics.
Mm-hmm. It is Final Fantasy Tactics, except basically you go around and collect enemies like Pokemon and can utilize their abilities to cast different effects in battle. And I think that's just great. It's like Final Fantasy Tactics, but with like a little bit of a touch of Persona.
You can't help but love the name of the developer, Endless Fluff.
Uh-huh.
By the way, the publisher is Humble Games, and it seems like Humble and Devolver and Adult Swim all have a great eye for indie games. You know, they find the stuff that's different but viable.
Mm-hmm. And like, I liked the design of characters in this game. They all look very fun. Whether it's the enemies or the characters you actually play as, I like the sprite design that we saw.
It's a little retro, I think. It's very nice.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to evoke the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
Which is just perfect. Like, I like Friend Dog, who just follows you around and does Friend Dog stuff. And also, when you have a game that's like this, where you have all sorts of like mythological creatures that you can just utilize, like they're like this, I'm really interested to see what happens when you get like a full arsenal of Fae on your side.
So Amplitude Studios is throwing their hat into the. Now, for those of you who don't know, Amplitude Studios are the guys behind the Endless games, you know, Endless Space and all that stuff. But they're throwing their hat in with Humankind, which is their take on Civ.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really pretty. And it's taking, you know, it's – a lot of it reminds me of the first Civ in terms of, you know, those cars that come up when you do stuff.
Yeah. That's always been one of the strengths of Amplitude is like putting some RPG elements into the game as you're playing through the usual civilization grind. I really liked that Endless Legend and like the Draken race.
Endless Dungeon? Dungeon of the Endless? No.
Oh no, that was Endless Legend. Like, I really like the storytelling that they do with their factions, and this is looking a lot more freeform than others.
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, this has something that Civ doesn't, and that is verticality, because when you have a cliff, it actually goes up. It's not like in Civilization, in which basically all the tiles are on one plane. Humankind is taking that and actually giving actual height to it. So if you're on a mesa, you're actually above other people below you. And when you have a river going down, you actually have a waterfall, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're taking verticality into the mix. Because in Civ, you know, you really didn't have to worry about whether your soldiers are on the high ground or low ground. Here, that I think it's going to become a thing.
Yeah. And, like... I'm going to have a lot more to say about this next week because I have a project coming up. But
not coming out until next year. So.
But without giving too much away, I really like how they're handling customization in this game.
Oh, well, they talked about – I think they did talk about it during the show. Maybe I'm thinking of a different game, but they were talking about how there was going to be tons of modding in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're depending on mods. But it's just, you know, here's the thing. It's a new hat thrown in the Civilization ring, which we haven't seen since – oh, boy. What was the name of that game by Activision? Test of Time?
Yeah.
I haven't had a true Civ game that wasn't something by Firaxis.
Yeah, and Amplitude Studios are the people to do it. They're very good at what they do. And they make it just unique enough to not be like a Civ clone.
Yeah. So, I don't really want to talk about Escape from Tarkov because that's been out for a long, long while. And a lot of them are just like remasters like Tony Hawk. But one of the strange ones was Potionomics.
Yeah.
That one by Xseed. And it looks weird. I really do want to check it out at some point.
Yeah. Basically cooking up potions as a witch for adventurers to come and buy. You are the potion seller.
Yeah.
Potion seller.
Passion seller.
Tell me your potion.
X is always a little bit out there.
Well, it's like that other RPG where you go out adventuring and you bring stuff back to sell for other adventurers to go out adventuring, but this one's just potions.
Yeah. There's also The Last Campfire, which intrigued me as well, and that's by Hello.
I like.
Yeah.
I like this one is a really hard one to because this is the one that has like six words in its title that really annoyed Jonah. The Dungeon of Nailbuk, the Amulet of Chaos,
it had too many words in it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it has Felicia Day in it, so I think the humor of that game is supposed to reflect like the Guild show that she had done. And you know, but it's a tactical RPG where you're
too many words.
A party group, and you're moving people around on the map to do fighting. And you know, so it's, you know, I don't know. I think it's fine. You know, cheesy humor if it wants.
I have to ask TJ about this. What did you think of the FPS that was basically Crypt of the NecroDancer, Metal Hellsinger?
Oh my god, it looks so good. And also, like, have you seen the cast of musicians they have lined up for it?
No, well, I think they did flash some of them. I know it's a lot of hardcore metal in it.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's a list of bands that, like, is legendary to me. Like, Trivium on its own is a huge get. But they have a lot of good, like, they have a lot of good musicians lined up and making original music for that game. And that on its own is cool. But the fact that they just made, like, Crypt of the NecroDancer, they made Crypt of the NecroDancer and mixed it with, like, straight up fast paced doom gibbing.
Sort of like Ion Fury or.
It looks dope. Like, I'll play the heck out of that game. Because, like, the whole point behind it is that, like, you don't have to kill on beat to the music,
but
as you do, it layers the soundtrack so it gets more intense and you become more powerful as a result.
Yeah, so I thought that you would latch onto that one.
Yeah, like, mechanically and aesthetically, that is completely my jam.
I forgot to ask if you started playing the Trials in the Sky, TJ, because I thought you said you were going to start.
I have not gotten there yet. I had a lot of reviews to do this last week.
Okay. what'd you think of Red Sails?
Red Sails?
Yeah, that one in which you're in a boat, but instead of on the water, you're on the desert.
It looked interesting, but, like, I don't know that it was, like...
It sort of reminded me of Journey.
Yeah, definitely. That's it.
What's going on with your mic?
Sorry, I had a cough.
The muting was audibly loud.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was just a little click. Yeah. I thought Godfall looked kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's been in development for a while now.
But it's third person fighting gods, and yeah, you're leveling up. It looked interesting to me. I get all sorts of different weapons, different skills. It looks like you're fighting the Zodiacs. Well, you know, you get Zodiac-inspired armor. You can also fight solo or alongside friends with a area playverse environment online or co-op play. So, I mean, it looked good, and it looked vibrant to me. The colors were nice. I know Jonah made a comment that it was like Dark Souls. He said it quite a lot, actually. But this one in particular, I thought, was not as accurate, because it felt more, positive, you know? Because, like, Dark Souls is very dark and dreary, and Godfall looked kind of bright and colorful. So it wasn't as... It seemed more like God of War than Dark Souls, or at least not as grim as Dark Souls.
Yeah, and I knew that you were telling me that TJ was going to get upset at me for calling it Dark Souls.
Mortal Shell looks dope.
No, I'm talking about the genre, though. He was saying God of War. I was saying Dark Souls.
Oh, are we still talking about Godfall?
Yeah.
I was going to say, because there was a much more Dark Souls-y game in this lineup.
Yeah, I said that one. I said, yeah, that's definitely Dark Souls.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that one.
It was wearing its influence on its sleeve, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mortal Shell looks like it's going to be interesting, though. I really liked the idea of the enemy that becomes stronger alongside you throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that there were so many games before that had a nemesis system, not like Middle Earth, but I always wanted a game in which whatever you did, they would adapt so that that would be a no-sell against them. Like in a game, say I decided I was going to have a fire attack, they would have water armor or something like that. When they, you know, something like that, a true nemesis system. Your enemy leveled up along with you, but kitted himself out to specifically attack you.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not like that hasn't existed in even Dark Souls games in certain ways. Like there have been enemies that like repeatedly came back. But they, like, had tiers. Like, you run into the pursuer the first time, and he's, like, a certain way. And then you run into him later, and he's just, like, has a different pattern. This is, like, an enemy that actually gets different equipment, gets different patterns, and, like, levels up alongside you.
And is basically there to defeat you and no one else.
And it's worth noting, Mortal Shell's progression system, as they have it like written down in their description on Epic Games, you possess the bodies of different dead warriors and basically learn their skills that they had, and take them with you from body to body as you go through the game. So essentially, this is going to be an enemy that does the same.
Yeah. By the way, getting back to Persona 4 Golden just for a moment, something I just remembered. When I was streaming the thing, I decided to just put Persona 4 Golden because it wouldn't let me do PC Gaming Show. And one little interesting little detail came up when I did that. It said, for the description of the game, it said, Persona 4 Golden Game Pass.
Oh.
Which makes me wonder, I wonder if Microsoft's going to be announcing in July that Persona 4 Golden is part of Game Pass.
That's a scoop.
Yeah. So one more game from the PC Gaming Show, because we've been talking an awful lot about this. Why don't we talk about Don't Nod's version of Alan Wake, Twin Mirror. I was watching that trailer, and I kept on thinking, oh, finally, they're announcing Alan Wake 3. It's not, but it might as well be.
Mm-hmm.
Even down to using your flashlight to light up enemies to kill them.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I love Alan Wake. And Don't Nod doesn't like look like they're making a bad version of it. But there were other horror games in this lineup that I enjoyed more than Twin Mirror.
I'm just saying, it takes place in a forest. It's you have light, and the only thing is, it looks like they're runaways from Don't Nod's other game, their adventure games. Oh, damn, I forgot the name of it. I can't believe I forgot the name of the stupid adventure game. They had two seasons of it, damn it.
I just completely forgot, too.
Yeah, but it looks like Don't Nod... I hate doing this.
Life is Strange. That's the
Life
one.
It's like Alan Wake had a baby with Life is Strange.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like... I don't mind it. It looked fine. I think In Sound Mind looked like a better horror game. It looked original, at least.
Yeah, but it's no Scorn.
Mm-hmm. But, like, and then there was Outlast, Outlast Trials. Do y'all care about the Outlast games at all?
All I know is that it's a game in which naked people full frontally nude attack you.
Yes. But... Every time before, you were alone and you didn't have anyone to help you. This is going to be a multiplayer take on that, which the characters in Outlast never have a way of defending themselves. So that's going to be interesting, because is it going to be like, are you friends with these other people, or is it a case of, I don't have to run fast, I just have to run faster than you? So I'm interested to see how they do that.
Yeah. I mean, there are other games we could talk about. I mean, we could talk about Cardo. We could talk about Proteus, which, by the way, interested me a little. What's it called? Cause just from the look. There was other games. You know, we just have to run. You know, I don't want to get into it. I mean, Amazon's doing their own MMO, for crying out loud. New World.
Yeah.
It looked interesting. It looked like Sword and Blade, but I don't know. I mean, how many MMOs has Amazon done?
This is going to be their second major new game since they did Crucible, and Crucible got eviscerated in reviews. Like, it's not that Crucible is bad, but there are a lot of issues that players have come up against. For one thing, it's a team-based game, and there's no way to communicate, which is just like, I don't know. I don't like talking to trolls. But if you have a team game, you have to have some way to communicate with them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the very last thing I want to talk about is Everspace 2. And it actually is more attractive than Star Citizen and Elite Dangerous so far.
Yeah, I love Everspace. I've gotten to play Everspace 1, and I did some Everspace 2 at PAX South before everything shut down this year, so I'm really enjoying what they're doing with that game.
Yeah, we already talked about Elite Dangerous Odyssey last week, so we don't have to talk about it now. That was the only other space sim that they had to talk about. Let's talk about the PS5. So I think the game that everybody was talking about after the show, I think personally, it was the new Spider-Man game, Spider-Man Miles Morales.
That does look interesting. I think it's a good idea. It's a good change to have, you know, get a little break from Peter Parker and try a different character perspective on interpretation of Spider-Man. I liked the Into the Spider-Verse, so I'm looking forward to seeing this character again.
Yeah, and there was some confusion for a little bit as to whether this was going to be a standalone or like DLC, because Sony executive got it wrong. Happy to hear that it's going to be a full standalone game, which, from what I understand, the type of spinoff they're talking about is going to be kind of like Infamous. There was an Infamous spinoff that did something similar.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that the Miles Morales font was in the same font as Homecoming, which tells me that you also have Peter Parker in it, which is part of it, you know, because I forgot the name of the animated movie. What was it? Spider-Man. Do you remember the name of it?
Far From Home?
Hmm.
Was that the one with Miles Morales that was animated?
Oh no,
that was the
I said that already.
Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. So
it was very good.
I mean, I wonder if they're going to do the same plot as Into Spider-Verse, which wouldn't be a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah, I think. I don't know if they will, but I think it would be nice if they did their own or another new story. I mean, usually they kind of do with these video game movies.
And let's talk about the elephant in the room. Game that's coming out on all platforms, and I know that I'm pretty sure that TJ is salivating all over it, and that's Resident Evil Village, which cheekily has the 8 built into the word village.
I have said this before, and I'll say it again. I have a theory about where this series is headed.
So is Chris Redfield going to be the villain?
I don't know. That was an interesting bit. Also, Chris Redfield looks completely different again, and this time he is rocking like major conspiracy theory dad bod.
Well, how long has it been since Chris Redfield was relevant? I mean, when did Resident Evil 4 come out? That has to be around 20 years ago.
Yeah. He was in Resident Evil 7, but he looked like sleek special agent back then.
Well, when did 7 take place, though?
I don't know. I don't know how much time passes between Resident Evil 7 and Resident Evil 8.
Now, here's the thing. Resident Evil 7, if I recall, didn't really bring about the Umbrella stuff until very late in the game.
Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. I really hope they do it consistent. That's what I want out of this game. I want it to be consistent, because that was something that Resident Evil 7 failed to do. If they're going to go horror, keep it horror. Don't, like, veer off into some weird action first-person shooter territory.
I don't know. I mean, you can have it both. I mean, Resident Evil 4 was horror, it was camp, and it was action.
Yeah, but it did it well. Like, it kept the tone consistent throughout.
Goofy. That was the tone.
Resident Evil 7 was, like, really, really scary, and you felt helpless for most of the game. And then it takes, like, a hard left turn into you have a machine gun, and there are goo monsters. I don't know. Like, I just want this game to, like, take a tone and stick with it to the end. Don't, like, do weird... I don't know. I don't want to say don't experiment with the game, but, like, try to keep it scary, I guess.
So, speaking of frustrating as no end, are you excited over Demon's Souls?
I can't say that I am, just because, like, it's interesting to me, you know, because, like, this was a game that was before Dark Souls, and...
Well, it was by the same people. I mean.
Right, and Dark Souls, like, basically evolved a lot of things from Demon's Souls to become a better altogether game.
Well, you know, it could be that... they take what they learned from Dark Souls and just incorporate it, because it doesn't have to be a straight-up remake.
Yeah, that's right. And also, it's actually not From Software directly developing this.
Yeah, it's Japan Studio and Blue Point Games. But the one thing that I think people would be worried about is that they gotta include special controls from the PS5 DualSense, and that always means a disaster. Whenever you force, you know, new controls into a game... anybody who's played Lair can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. It will be interesting, though, because they're talking about putting content in this game that apparently got cut from the original game and it was reincorporated into Dark Souls. So it's going to be, like, the same, but it's also going to be have things that weren't there before.
How about the Horizon sequel?
I'm into it, top to bottom. Give it to me.
I think that's one of the reasons why they decided to release Horizon on PC.
Oh yeah, give them a taste so that they'll buy PS5s and they'll have to get PS5s to follow the story.
Unfortunately, they're telling people if you have to buy a PS5 if you own a PS4.
Yeah,
that's the one part I don't like about this, but it's not really a surprise. that, you know, if you want to play your old games, you're going to pretty much have to have an old console. So at this point, I'll have four consoles to play each generation of different PlayStation games. But keeping on the topic of the games that they revealed, there's a couple that I really like. And one of them I think is very interesting to me is Stray, where you're playing as a cat in a world of robots and you're solving crime.
Yeah. So the only problem I have with that is that they already released that game.
Oh, okay. When and where? Because this is the first time I've heard
For the PSA. You remember it was Tokyo Jungle?
I guess.
That's this game. Tokyo Jungle was a game in which all humans were gone and you played as an animal running around the city. You know, you could play as a Pomeranian, as a lion, as a crocodile.
I do remember that. Like a different game. I mean, sure, the humans are gone, you're playing as an
animal. This is basically the same concept. That's the only problem I have with Stray.
Solving mysteries with robots. What you described was an animal exploring a city with no humans.
No, but it has that same vibe. I'm getting the same vibe from it.
Well, I also liked Oddworld, although they just...
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, they're resurrecting Oddworld, Oddworld Soulstorm.
Which is cool. I mean, I've always liked the Oddworld series. It was very dystopian, very, underdog. Just, you know, you really felt for Abe, and you wanted to help him in his quest and collect all his citizens, which was always very difficult.
What's funny is if you play Inside, then you play the original Oddworld, you say, oh, wait a minute, now I get where they got their inspiration from.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Abe is gonna cut his mouth thing off, and that's like his whole thing. I don't like it. Don't do it. That's like your shtick.
Then they're coming with their own version of Mario World with Sackboy: A Big Adventure.
That would be cool.
You know what I liked more than the Sackboy game? The bots game. What was it?
Not Destruction All Stars. You gotta be kidding me.
No, not Destruction. You know what? Destruction All Stars also looked really good.
Are you talking about Ratchet and Clank?
No.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Ratchet and Clank are back. They were mostly on the PS3. They had a Ratchet and Clank on the PS4 just because it coincided with the movie. According to people, this game is what's really showing off the SSD in this system.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is the one game that was very, very specifically built for PS5. A lot of this stuff was either going to be on PS4 as well, or was going to be on other platforms. This one actually looks like it's built to take advantage of the PS5 the most.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, it's got a lot of reflections and a lot of different effects that are definitely ray tracing effects.
A lot of people are saying
effects.
It's a Pixar movie come to life.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of ray tracing effects that are happening in real time in this, and like, the gameplay.
Yeah.
And then there's just, like, the rendering of everything as things are happening, and so it's pretty much seamless. And, yeah, I was really impressed with that gameplay trailer.
Well, then maybe you like Ghost of Tsushima.
I do. I'm very interested in playing Ghost of Tsushima. What was the one that I was talking about?
Scarlet Nexus?
No. Astro's Playroom.
Oh, okay. Wait. I thought you... Never mind. I'm not going to... I'm not going to go there.
No, I said it looked like a better game than that. It looked like a better sort of Mario platformer style game than Sackboy. That said,
just a bunch of robots. They all look like Wally's girlfriend.
We should talk about Bugsnax.
Okay.
Because that thing ate a curly fry and then their arm turned into a curly fry.
Yeah.
And that's a world I want to live in.
Well, actually, you know, that reminds me. There was one game that really excited me. It's going to be on all platforms, and that is they're coming out with a console version of Planet Coaster.
Oh, that will be fun. That will be a lot of fun.
The other game that I really liked was Pragmata, which was weird as fuck. It's coming out on all next gen platforms too. Did you see the thing for it's like Hideo Kojima's wet dream. Although it's not by Hideo Kojima, it's from Capcom.
Yeah, Pragmata.
Yeah, it looks like the best game Hideo Kojima never made.
Yeah, it does. I actually thought it was something for Death Stranding when they were showing it.
Yeah. So, here's a question for you. Do you care about Hitman 3?
Nope, not even a little.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just I don't know. I don't know what it is that's just turned me off on Hitman. I guess maybe it was the fact that they did the first game, you know, with the episodic content. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's the same game over and over and over again.
Hmm.
So, is there anything else? No one cares about Gran Turismo 7. I mean, no. I don't care.
There's Bugsnax.
I saw Kenya Spirit looked interesting.
Was that during the show?
I don't know if it was during the show, but it's on the site that you linked. So I'm just
Kena
Bridges of the Spirits, which looks like a third-person action game.
That game. Yeah.
It kind of looks like a mix between Studio Ghibli and Pikmin.
It looks nice, you know. I mean, but you know, it's got a charm and it looks nice and it might be fun. It looks like they have a little bit of gameplay, so you can see the action. But yeah, they have cute little charcoal sprites running around, and you look like you're in a forest, and it's very mythical, or, you know, fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
This is this story-driven adventure game.
So, yeah, the other thing is, and it's not a part of the Middle-Earth series, but you also have Lord of the Rings Gollum coming out, which is going to be interesting, because you're actually playing as Gollum.
Yeah. I've had mixed feelings about that, because it sounds like an interesting concept, but also, who asked for that?
I don't know.
It's being developed by Daedalic. I mean, Daedalic has some interesting things. It's not being done by Monolith, so it's not going to be the same kind of game that Middle-Earth is.
Yeah. Daedalic is very good at story-driven games.
I know some people that would love this game, that they always wanted to play Gollum. The character just fascinated them. And
why?
Just acting like him, pretending to be him. I don't know. I'm not that.
Maybe they should just play a game in which you play Andy Serkis.
There are people that want to play the anti-villain, or not even. They want to play the villain, and that's...
But
that's,
he's not a villain.
He's a villain.
He's an antagonist, but he's not a villain.
He's a pretty bad character.
He killed his cousin for the freaking ring, and then hit it for like... I guess you could say maybe it was kind of heroic that he hit it for however long, 200, 300 years in the mountain, kept it from influencing the world for a little while.
No, he's just addicted to it. That's all. He's addicted to finding out secrets.
But... Anyways, but there are people that want to play evil characters, or at least not nice characters, and there you go. You got Gollum.
Well, I mean, the entire thing about Gollum is the idea of redemption. You know, technically, he never did redeem himself in the end.
No, he didn't. I mean,
he was in conflict with his inner struggle. You know, he wasn't all there. I just want to know, are you still playing Rainbow Six Siege there, TJ?
Nah.
Okay, just wondering.
Gollum 8, Frodo's ring finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why Frodo was known Frodo Nine Fingers at the end. No, I'm serious, that was his name, wasn't it? Frodo Nine Fingers?
I can't even remember, but that sounds...
Because I know that he was named... Yeah, he was called Frodo Nine Fingers at the end. Frodo of the Nine Fingers. That was his badge of honor, having his ring finger chomped off by Gollum.
That's a terrible badge of honor.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he saved the entire friggin' world. And, you know, it wasn't his middle finger, so he's not deprived of that.
A Well, it doesn't mean anything to them.
If people want to insult them, all you have to do is give them a middle finger and say, guess what? You can't read between the lines, so. Right.
You got bit by a crispy meth head. We shall bestow upon thee a title.
I just don't think there's much difference between Gollum and Trevor, right? I think they're practically the same character.
Oh, no. Trevor, say what you want about Gollum. Never murdered anybody out of spite.
Yeah, his cousin?
No, that wasn't out of spite. The ring called to him and he wanted it. It's his birthday.
It was his birthday.
But he didn't do it just because, you know, he didn't shit on the floor in front of people.
Gollum is nothing if not very focused.
Very focused.
There's only one thing, he wants his ring back. That's it.
Yeah. And his horrible, terrible hobbits.
Anyways, before we start doing imitations of Gollum, we do have one news item. It's a pretty big one.
Before we move on, I do want to talk about Deathloop. Did you guys see the trailer for that?
Which one?
Deathloop.
Oh, yeah.
Arcane's new game.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I love Arcane. I love Arcane games. And I love how much of their previous work like came to the forefront when they were showing this off. It was like that sort of stylized art style. It was that sort of like supernatural occult abilities mixed with first person stealth and also gunplay. And also I just really dug the sort of grindhouse vibe behind this.
By the way, speaking of look, I recently saw a new trailer for, finally they have a release date for 13, the remaster.
Oh, yeah. They put out a 13 classic, and I guess if you buy it, you get the remake for – it'll unlock the remake for free.
Cool. But, yeah, it's finally coming out. It's supposed to come out last year.
That's going to be fun. The remake is going to be a fun one just because of, like, that – interesting sort of comic book style.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun too. I really like the time. The it's got like a little bit of We Happy Few, a little bit of Edge of Tomorrow, a little bit of Grindhouse. I just love everything they're doing with Deathloop.
Yeah, and you might sort of be bored by this, but I actually am interested in they just finally revealed PGA Tour 2K21. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been waiting for a good golf career game for a while, and I'm hoping this is one.
When's the last time they did one?
Who? I don't know if 2K ever did a golf game, to tell you the truth. I know that Tiger Woods was an EA property.
Oh, yeah.
And they screwed that up. And the reason why, I guess, is that they're not going to have any ultimate teams because golf is a solo player sport. You don't have teams in golf.
They got to figure out unique ways to monetize everything.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, a really good golf game. I just want one, you know, with a nice little career mode.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the rumor. And if this is true, it's going to be interesting. Rumor, Xbox Series S, a.k.a. the Lockhart, will be half the price of the Series X. From WCCF Tech. Speaking on the Beyond 3D forums, Eastman, who has provided in the past to have access to Microsoft Insider information, revealed that the Xbox Series S will be half the price of the Series X, come in a small form factor, and will be an all-digital console. The Insider doesn't know the final pricing for the Xbox Series X, then thus the Series X, but he had heard the Series S, but he had heard that Microsoft was prepared for a $400 Xbox Series X. According to Eastman, last I heard, it'll be half the price of the SSX. Oh, I'm surprised they actually said that without slurring my words. And last I heard, Microsoft were preparing a $400 SSX. I'm not sure what the final price will be. I think if Sony is $500 to $600, Microsoft may go in the $200, $400, $500, but we'll see. Microsoft will make up any losses that they take from getting a higher cut of the game sales and more subscriptions. Pricing also depends on what Sony does. Microsoft doesn't have to go to as extreme in pricing if Sony prices itself higher. He continued, but from what I've heard from all my sources, July isn't about Sony. So, July is about the industry, and they want to be at a night of mic drops. they're going to come hard with the strategy that they've been building up to for years, and they want to, and they want Google, Amazon, Apple, Sony, and yes, Nintendo to shake it up. So expect a series of mic drop moments, followed by the price being part of all this. According to the insider, Microsoft wants to become what Netflix was a few years ago when it came comes to streaming, and as such, they're aiming to acquire a lot of quality content for their platform. As such, the Xbox Series S will be a key device in the company's strategy, as it'll allow them to reach a market where they were never able to hit with its lower price. That's why I think Lockhart is a key device in their strategy. It's low-cost gateway that – God, the way this guy writes in his forums, he does write like he's never written before. It's low-cost gateway that they can control to make sure the hardware can handle their new compression techniques they will employ with – employ, I'm guessing he meant to say, with xCloud over the next few years. The plan for Lockhart is to get price categories they were never able to hit before – and I believe, based on listening between the lines, they expect Lockhart to, at some point, make it down to Fire TV size. Also, the size of the first Lockhart will surprise everyone. So basically, they're saying, yeah, they're going to make it a little GameCube-type thing, if the rumor is true. I mean, you know, this person has been accurate a lot of stuff, but you still have to have a thumb firmly in cheek with a grain of salt there. But yeah, I can see Microsoft lowballing Sony by 100 because they're making their money with Game Pass hand over fist. And from what I understand, they can stand to take a $10 million loss. That's why, by the way, consoles are called loss leaders, because usually when you release a console, you're releasing it that's priced a little bit below what it costs the manufacturer. That's why it's called a loss leader. So you're expecting to make your money back when people are getting buying your stuff and getting licensing and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, Microsoft's been the victim of mic drops. Sony's given mic drops. I mean, we remember the major mic drop that they did on the Dreamcast. Was it Dreamcast or was it the Saturn? In which they just simply revealed the price of the PlayStation 2 and just walked away. Or was it the PlayStation 1? I forget which. Then they had that thing in which when the Xbox One was going to be all digital, and it's like there was complicated ways to trade. They said, this is how you trade games with a PlayStation 4. And one guy gave a disc to the other guy. So we'll see. So here's the question. If the Xbox Series X is $400 and they sell the Xbox Series S for $200 – what do you think that'll – I'm still going to buy the X because, frankly, I still want a disc in the drive. I mean, I can see where other people wouldn't mind streaming and they wouldn't mind digital. I mean, a lot of the games we buy anyway are digital.
I am
but still.
Used to digital stuff because then I don't have to look for the discs. And I remember back in the cartridge days – and I saw that display that they would have in the store where they would have 10 cartridges plugged in and you could switch between the games. I was like, I want to be able to do this someday, be able to just switch between a game and play a game without having to change cartridges.
Well, here's a question. When was the last time you ever got a physical PC game?
I think Skyrim, you know, or actually the Pillars.
I got it for Pillars of Eternity, but that's only because I spent $147 for the physical ads.
Yeah, special edition. So it's been a very long time, and so most of my games are on Epic or GOG or Steam, and I haven't had any trouble with that. And I think the only game that apparently went away was the Minecraft Story Mode, but all my other games are still there. So you know, it's been nice just to be able to switch to a game and not have to worry about where's the disc and changing them and making sure they're in the right box, and it just. And not having to worry about them being damaged either or lost. So there's a lot of advantages to digital edition.
Jay?
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I bought a physical game. It was probably on the Nintendo Switch when it first launched.
Well, I still rent them on Gamefly.
But all I'm saying is like, I have literally no need for a disc drive. And so I like the idea of going with a console that completely forgoes that. Like, honestly, I think it's I think it's just the, I think that's just the way to go for a lot of people. And I mean, I'm not, I know that I'm not alone when I'm talking about, like, I'm just all digital these days. That said, I've heard some interesting arguments come up with that, like that along the path of, like, if we're going to go full digital, does that mean we're going to see any sort of change in digital rights management?
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Another thing that's been coming up a lot, and Steam has implemented it, Microsoft's implemented it, and that is the ability to get a refund on digital games. So that's important. I mean, that's one of the barriers that people have to buy something digitally, because for the most part, people say, well, you can't return it if you don't like it.
Well, not only that, but in a lot of cases, unless you have the code or something, if the game is unlocked, you can't gift it to somebody else. You have it on your setup, and that's all that can be done.
Fortunately, Microsoft, you know, does have that thing. I don't know if Sony does, but in which if you're on a friend's Xbox, if you log on to your account, you can play the games that you have in your library on their gut machine. You can do that on the PlayStation, right?
What is it?
Well, suppose I go to a friend's house and he has an Xbox One. If they switch to my account, I can download the games that I own and play it on his system while it's still logged onto my account.
I know you can do that on the Switch. So if you do it on the Switch, you could probably do it on the PlayStation. I haven't tried that.
You never know. You have to find out from Sony.
Yeah.
It's not that important, though. The main thing is that digital refunds are a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, DCMA is another thing that I think is going to have to be dealt with in the next few years, especially if people start getting salty. One thing that I've noticed is that there's been a lot of demos lately. And that's telling me that publishers are starting to realize, you know, if we're going to be moving towards digital, we want people to buy our stuff. And one of the attractive things about buying a physical copy is you can always trade it in later. And I think they want people to really like a game before they commit to buying it digitally now.
Yeah.
Because then people will just wait and wait for the price to drop. And you make your money on day one. You don't make it on day 500. So let's talk about the idea that the Xbox Series S might be $200.
That will be wild if it's true.
Yeah, very wild. I don't think it'll be 200.
How much does the Switch cost now?
I thought it was about...
Still $300, right?
Somewhere around there.
$300, I think, for the regular Switch, and I think $250 or $200 for the... For the Switch Lite.
Okay.
Let me make sure on that, because it might even be cheaper.
Because I know you can now, right now, with the Xbox One, do what you do with Microsoft is doing this with cell phones. You know, just pay $25 a month for the next 2 years, so you can own it. And you, by the way, you also get Xbox Live Gold and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, $250 for a Switch Lite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, can you imagine Microsoft doing the mic drop of saying, and the Xbox Series S, $200. Or they'd probably go $199.99, since that sounds less than $200. You want that one in front.
Yeah, I think – I don't know. I can't imagine it being $200. Maybe they'll shock the heck out of me.
Well, this isn't the Xbox Series X. This is the Xbox Series S, which will have – it won't run – I'm trying to remember what it is. I think it'll still support the same resolution. It won't have certain aspects, you know. The games will be on par a little bit – it'll be like on par with the Xbox One X, but it'll have better resolution, something like that. The other thing is that Microsoft still has the I forgot the name of it. You know the name of it. Something you buy on the Xbox One X is gonna. You can get the Xbox Series X when you upgrade. Smart delivery.
Yeah.
And I think that's gonna be something that Microsoft's gonna be pushing heavy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they've already said straight up that all first party Xbox games or pretty much anything through the Xbox Game Studios are probably gonna be supported through smart delivery.
Well, to me, the bigger thing is, and they've been at their word, is that all first-party games are available day one on Game Pass. That's more important to me, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Microsoft was embarrassed in 2015. Was it 2015? I think. Or maybe earlier, 20. When did the Xbox Series, Xbox One, not the Xbox One X, debut? Let me see. I think, yeah, it's 2013. Yeah, they were embarrassed that year. Which is why, you know, they saw God and they're doing all these consumer-friendly stuff. The reason why they're doing the consumer-friendly stuff is they're forced to. They, you know, they have to become the good guys here so that they people will buy their stuff because they made such a PR disaster. And the fact of the matter is, I think Microsoft knows that when it comes to U.S. sales, they're even with Sony. They don't sell in Japan, and they really don't sell in Europe either. So they're focusing on U.S. sales as well. The only problem with the all-digital console, of course, is that not everybody has a good connection.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue for a lot of places in the U.S. where, like, I mean, like, places like West Virginia just, like, don't even have – there are huge swaths of the area that just don't have the infrastructure for it.
You know what would be good if GameStop were smart? They could sell you digital games even if you didn't have an internet connection by just letting you hook up the USB, a USB and just writing the game onto your hard drive. So that you could have the $200 console but not have to have an internet connection for it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to July now because that's when everybody's going to be revealing prices and when and where's.
Yeah, we're going to finally see it. I'm hoping we'll finally see an end to this long-standing game of chicken between Microsoft and Sony. Because, like, how weird is it that Sony, like, showed the consoles, showed the accessories, showed the games?
Can we tell you how ugly that console is, by the way? I don't know what they were thinking with it.
It looks like a dehumidifier.
The biggest problem I see with it is, you know, can you imagine laying it out on side?
I thought it looked like something a stormtrooper would have had because it just has all
the. There were so many memes about that thing.
Oh, yeah. It looks like a Wi-Fi router. It looks like something in Portal.
They put their PlayStation 4 inside a bookbinder, a white bookbinder, and said, look, I have a PlayStation 5. Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, say what you want about the Xbox Series X being a refrigerator, but at least it's square or rectangular. By the way, the Xbox Series X is really small too. It's not big, and you can lay it on its side. I'm just worried if I play the PlayStation 5 on its side, it might overheat.
I have seen that there is a setup where you can lay the PS5 on its side.
The fact that there's a setup in which you can do that makes me wonder.
Well, if it's digital only, it doesn't really matter.
Well, I don't think it's just digital only. No, it has a disk slot.
Okay, I thought there was a digital version.
There is.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, you know, you have to think about overheating and all that stuff. It looks like they wanted to make it look cool. You know, like some people would do their PC mods.
Yeah, well, the PC mods there's a meme I saw where somebody showed a bunch of different PC mods, which was basically an AT-AT walker, a TARDIS.
Yeah, that was the PC gaming show. Yeah, they showed those weird mods.
Yeah, so it's like they get very creative with those.
But that's not what you want for your mass-produced console.
No, you want
those PC mods are all for people who are actually, you know, interested in that one thing. I mean, if you want to mod your console, go right ahead. Just don't assume everybody wants their console modded.
Right. I don't know. I mean,
is that how big it was? The actual size?
I didn't look at the dimension.
They haven't showed an actual size on it. There was a picture that somebody put out, but it was a fake.
There was like you could see the controller next to it, so you get kind of a general idea. I mean, it's probably.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure someone's gonna do a Photoshop of it in their palm of their hand.
Probably approximately the size of the old PlayStation, maybe a little bit bigger.
It's smaller because the Xbox Series X is much smaller than the Xbox One X. Boy, that's going to be confusing, isn't it?
Yep.
Microsoft, just call it the Xbox 4 or Xbox 5 if you want to get your jollies.
Yeah, it just would have made everything a lot easier. I mean, whatever, it's fine.
I mean, what are you going to call the next one? The Xbox Series X 2?
XZ, XY, I don't know.
The XXYY, ABAB, left, left, right, right console?
So, the Xbox One X was just the acronym for Xbox.
Yeah. But this is SSX.
Yeah.
We're going to call it the Xbox Sexy now.
Yeah, the Sexy Edition.
The Xbox Sex Edition. Well, you know, VHS won the format wars by being the one that pornos preferred to go on, so you never know. Yeah, Microsoft Xbox Sex. We have more pornos on our system. Microsoft, the porn console. You know why it's shaped like that now, don't you? Now, yeah. What the Xbox? They're gonna brag. Their controllers have the best rumble ever.
Haptic feedback.
They just people will buy the Xbox Series X for the same reason people bought Rez. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, just look it up. Let's just say the fact that it was the first vibrating game made it a very popular game with certain demographics. Anyways, yeah, I mean, July is going to be fun. I know I'm already going to buy the Xbox Series X because I have a shit ton of software on my Xbox. And, oh, by the way, that's something we didn't – did we discuss this? Microsoft also announced that they are going back. They're starting up their backwards compatibility stuff again. They had put it on pause for a while, you know, bringing new games to backwards compatibility. They said they're starting – and they're getting – people asking suggestions for new backwards compatible games. We didn't discuss that, did we?
No, we didn't.
Okay, well, there's going to be new backwards compatible stuff. Sony said that most of the PS4 games will be backwards compatible on the PS5. I'm thinking not all of them because of licensing issues, specifically music licensing issues. That's a big bugaboo for a lot of games. And that's why they were bragging about Tony Hawk 1 and 2 being remastered, because I think either they're going to have the old music or they're just going to get some new music that's really cool. Because a lot of people hated the remaster because they didn't have the music they liked. Although maybe the music that was in the original Tony Hawk 1 and 2, this is back in 2000 or 1999, I want to say, is so old that now the licensing is really, really cheap. Anyways. And we still don't know what Nintendo's doing.
I don't think they're going to release a new console for a while.
I don't mean a console. I just mean for non-E3.
I thought they were doing Nintendo Direct. I thought there was a June or July Nintendo Direct coming.
Didn't they say they had a new controller coming out?
I don't remember. I know that they pushed any plans that they had for like a Nintendo Direct back indefinitely because they were talking about doing one in June, and then it got canceled.
Does Nintendo see how much money Game Pass is making for Microsoft? And Microsoft doesn't have half the library that Nintendo does with their old stuff. I mean, a Netflix for Nintendo games, and by that, I mean all of them. I mean, people would pay a hand and over fist for that.
Yeah, right now you just have that limited library that they've released for the virtual console of Nintendo and Super Nintendo games, and they just released, like, Rygar, and then a couple other...
Oh, Rygar.
Played
that in the arcades. It was a snooze.
How was it a snooze? It had the most awesome...
Rygar was a snooze.
Rygar?
It had like
You had a yo-yo for a weapon.
It's not a yo-yo. It was a
yo-yo blade for a weapon.
fine. It was fun. You're bored.
I mean, you might not announce, hey, guess what? We have Ghosts and Ghouls now.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a whole bunch of games that it could be putting on their virtual console, and they're just...
If it was Microsoft, I'm willing to bet you they would put everything. Everything available. Or at least have a rotating thing. Like, we have these 1,000 games available. Next month we're going to have these 1,000 games, but don't worry, the other 1,000 games are going to come back again. I mean, Nintendo has an almost peerless library. Only the Commodore 64 compares with it. Mm-hmm. You know? I just don't understand it. And, oh, by the way, I would love that if there was a Commodore 64 emulation Game Pass service.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. There were a lot of games on Commodore 64 that I never got to play that actually looked good.
Auto-Duel. I played the shit out of Auto-Duel. But I never really got far. I didn't care. My car got blown up. I don't care. I'm just going to start a new game. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.